Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
All right. Hey, so this is a very special Sunday bonus. Chuck and I wanted to talk about locations for a long time, and I'm excited. You know, we're close to a milestone on YouTube, and it's my birthday today. Well, if you're watching on Sunday,
this is a birthday present to you, Pete.
Yes, it's a birthday gift to all of our fans. A little bonus, you know. So it's exciting. Wow, Chuck. I mean, locations are so important, and I guess you know it always starts with a location manager and scout. How important are those things to trying to find the proper places?
Well, you know, the location, man, in television, they are kind of one and the same thing, because to actually film anywhere, and I don't know if this has happened particularly for those who live in areas where there's a lot of filming, you have to get the permission not only of the place that you're filming, but the places around where you're filming, because you're going to impact the neighbors, because the choice where you make it in choosing a location, one of the most technical things that one has to consider is the most unglamorous, which is where do you park your trucks? And you need to do so. You park the trucks in front of other people's houses.
Yes.
So you definitely go around with that. And you also always need to be prepared for contingencies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's say you get a location, you're filming at a house that you've just done for the day. For instance, in the episode that we did where the chancellor had the guest from the other country, and yes, there was the Jana and all that. That house was in Hancock Park. And for whatever reason, we started filming and somebody started blowing an air horn.
Oh, great.
Yep. And the reason they did that is because they wanted my location manager to walk over and say, how much do you want to stop blowing the effing air horn? Right. And I believe that we paid one time.
Yeah.
Like $250. I don't think it was that show. I'm just picking that show at random.
Gotcha.
But it did happen one time to us. It happens all the time.
Yeah.
So because you're at a mercy. Although sometimes a director or producer will say in a movie, forget about it. We'll loop it. We're dubbing it. We're not going to give you the satisfaction.
Fair enough. Right.
Movies different from television in that regard. Yeah.
And you guys do definitely take over the block. You know what I mean? It's not like a small crew. You know, even a small crew is very large. So it's going to impact wherever you are. You know,
they'll have multiple. It's not that the small crew is very large, but they will have multiple trucks.
Exactly.
You have a truck for makeup. You have a truck for wardrobe. You have a truck for electrics, and then you have a truck for camera.
I'm sure the crew
and then
the cast
have a truck.
Their own little trailers and whatnot, right?
And then you have the star trailers.
Yeah.
And then you have a truck just to have a truck. So all the trucks are there.
Right. Yeah.
You know, it's keep on trucking as it would be.
But, you know, the show's about Beverly Hills. How was Beverly Hills about, you know, being attached
so those who know the show certainly and know my relationship with the show knows that I did not actively produce the pilot.
Mm-hmm.
The pilot was presented to me. So my first thought in seeing the pilot was, why are they in Torrance High School? You know, when I think of my high school, I'm in Beverly Hills High School. Let's see why don't we film there? Maybe they weren't available in the pilot.
Sure.
And the same being true is I looked at the Walsh house and realized it was unsatisfactory for two reasons. One is the house was incredibly ugly,
mm-hmm,
and was just available, and that's why they chose it. We could do much better. We could do one that was more user-friendly, even to the point of having the shared bathroom. So
right.
We could have so many scenes in the bath. That wasn't in the other house. And I knew that would be a good thing for twins. But the other thing, the real reason I didn't want to use that house is because the flatlands of Beverly Hills have sidewalks. The flatlands of the valley, the San Fernando Valley, where this house was, not have sidewalks. And I'm not usually a stickler for authenticity. I'm ready to slide. If I was, I wouldn't have had three different actors play Kelly's father if I was right. So. Yeah. No. I mean, you do what you need to do. But I just couldn't go with that. Being a native of Beverly Hills, it was, you know, something very distinct and separated. So that right. mattered to me a great deal. And when you started looking for a place that had sidewalks, hello out to Dean.
Yes. Yeah.
But your question, the other question about Beverly Hills, and it was about the high school, of course. And what I didn't realize at the time was how angry the Beverly Hills Board of Education was at the Fox Broadcasting Company, specifically to Barry Diller, who was running the outfit. Barry Diller was a proud alum of Beverly Hills High School, a few years older than me. He and Candy Spelling were there at the same time. I'm not.
Interesting.
And he, you know, so it always mattered to him. And he always thought Beverly Hills would be a good, he stayed in Los Angeles. He was a show business, you know, legend even before he became into the internet. And he wanted to find ways to use that with the young network. And so he made a licensing deal with Beverly Hills High School so that they would, and I don't know, I wasn't privy to any of that. What I do know is that when he put the class of Beverly Hills into development with Aaron Spelling and Darren Starr, what he did was he canceled licensing agreement with the city of Beverly Hills.
Oh, boy.
And there was an immediate, once the show was ordered, once we were picked up, there was an immediate lawsuit.
Yeah.
And that's why in high school, you have every single episode make a differentiation between Beverly and West Beverly, that we would say both of them and to make the distinguish that there was one school and our school was different.
Right.
And I remember, so the kids at Beverly Hills High School, as you can imagine, were livid about this.
Sure.
And they were really, and they were especially angry because this was the year we were doing this, 1990. The city of Beverly Hills, the once vaulted school system of Beverly Hills, was really suffering and had to lay off teachers and this, their tax base was shrinking, all sorts of issues. And they thought I was perpetuating a fantasy that here's this lavish high school that has no problems like that.
Right.
And I remember finally at the end of the first season, I go to them. They asked me to come in and be interviewed. It was Beverly Hills High School, so they had their own television station in campus.
Right.
And they asked me, and I basically said to them, you know, our school is not Beverly Hills High School. It's Palisades High School. I named every private school in L.A., Brentwood, Crossroads.
Right.
It's an amalgamation. And in all fairness, I said, you know, talking about teacher salaries is not the most commercial attraction when you're really doing primetime entertainment.
Yeah.
But it was it affected everything we did relative to Beverly Hills. And so I'd like to throw out something to who's ever
listening to
this recorded. The first person who contacts Pete with the right answer to this question will come on the show for a time. And this is what the question is. We in the high school years, we shot only twice in the city of Beverly Hills, and we shot at the same location. Tell me the location and tell me the two episodes that we shot.
All right. So there you go. You can send that to me at peter@beverlyhills90210show.com, and someone will win a chance to pop on with us coming soon.
Yep.
So that's pretty exciting, man. Yeah, it's a good one. I can't wait to find out what the answer is. We'll have to tune in on Thursday. And we'll let you know. So Altadena became Beverly Hills because of sidewalks, essentially.
Well, that was the one thing. And we knew when we started, we also didn't really have a place to call to be a studio. Mm-hmm. The Spelling Entertainment was on a studio lot. It was called Warner Hollywood. It was right there on Santa Monica Boulevard and near La Brea. The old line, smaller studio. And I very much remember the telephone call that I made to the head of the facilities, who had just taken us, you know, my staff had been hired, and here we were, and we're in our offices, and it's a Thursday, and we get a note about, everybody goes about 2 o'clock that day. I stay in the office, of course, all the writers leave, I stay in, and we get a note saying that there'll be no reason to come into the office on Friday, because that's moving day. And everything that you have will be at your new office in the new Spelling building. So I call the guy up and I say, so where are our offices going to be in the new Spelling building? Pause. Let me call you back. The fact is, right from the start, 2 weeks into starting the job, we slipped through the cracks. Wow. We had no office.
No office. Right.
And so where we were ultimately housed was in a very strange post-production facility where they edited Twin Peaks. Because if you remember in the pilot, Dan, that it wasn't just Spelling Entertainment. There was this very other hip company called Propaganda.
Yes.
And they supplied, they were involved with Twin Peaks. So they found us this little space way in the back. And I remember E. Duke Vinson coming to visit about a week into it and looked around, and he knew this was not acceptable, not professional. And the Spelling office at 5750, which fans will know as the establishing shot of Melrose Place, that was became our place from which to find all the other locations that we had to use. And once Spelling said, you know, we own some warehouses out in the valley. Oh, by the way, we have to clear them all out, and none of them are soundproofed. But you'll find your house to be situated near then. And Pete lives out. I think you still live out in there. Yeah. So you know that the lifeline of Pasadena and Altadena to get into places is there are a couple of freeways, and one of them is called the 210.
Yes.
And it kind of runs north of the city of Los Angeles and swoops down. So it wasn't that far by how a crow flies.
Got it.
But in a practical sense of driving freeways and traffic, it was a whole day. You went there, you had to stay there. There was nowhere else. You better have 7 pages to shoot that day, or why bother? I did some of the math before to try to do it. And the studio to the Walsh House was 27 miles.
Okay.
So that's
studio to the Walsh House. That's where
in the middle heart of Van Nuys, Altadena, 27 miles. It wasn't the most. The most what wins is Torrance High School to the Walsh House. And so I had an aversion. I think it was an aversion to be at Torrance High School, but it was, especially for any of you guys who played high school sports. I played baseball for Beverly High, and we played at Torrance High School. They were a team we played against. And so to go down there and have this be embraced as Beverly Hills was a little strange, and didn't know, of course, all the opportunities, the beauty of filming at Torrance High School, how much we could film outside. And one of the reasons that it really played into what we needed is that we didn't need to ever go inside where they were. I think maybe we went into their auditorium. I'm sure we did. Not in year one, but after that. Oh, we did. No, I take that back. We did, of course, for Isn't It Romantic?
Right.
But, otherwise, I don't think we went inside anytime because we started to build our sets. And the sets that we built originally were the Walsh house, which you know,
yep.
Kitchen, the kids' bedroom, and the adjoining bathroom. Now, I do think most of you know about that location, that when you walk up the steps and go to the top of the stairway, the bedrooms aren't there. The bedrooms are separate. They're not built. They're not attached, and they have their own. So we had those two Walsh houses. We had the old Peach Pit, the one that was really cramped and developed to dovetail with an establishing shot of a great old LA diner kind of restaurant, the Apple Pan.
Yeah.
Peach Pit Apple Pan. Couldn't get the rights to the Apple Pan, so I said, okay, we're going to call it the Peach Pit. But that was the format. So we built that small set, and then we built another small set, which was Kelly Taylor's bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
You remember, she had the silk silks on it and yeah. the red thing. And we yeah. had that pretty much early. It was a swing set, but it was built, and we could put it up or take it down anytime we wanted. And then the other was the school itself. And where the school was and where the Walsh house was were right next to each other. Neither was soundproofed in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever you couldn't do work on improving the set in stage two if you were no. shooting on stage one.
In other words,
it was kind of like being Houdini. You know, they put you in a jacket and said, okay, here's this problem. Now get out of it. and we did, you know, but those were the first, you know, locations. And pretty much the irony of trying to find locations in Los Angeles are the places where the people who made their money in the film business or television business, where they live, Malibu, Beverly Hills, Santa Monica, actually,
right,
make it so difficult to come in and film there.
Interesting. Because
it is that NIMBY, not in my backyard.
Yeah. But
certainly Malibu was the most hypocritical because yeah. we were able to shoot, if you remember, fans, in season four, we had we shot at a beach house, you know, before going back to, we didn't do summer episodes, but we wanted a little bit of the feel of summer.
Right.
And this was, Brenda had gone to Minnesota and we were on a beach. Well, that beach house was notorious because the guy who lived there would rent to film companies. And it was the last house before the very exclusive gated Malibu Colony, where celebrities from the Eagles to Pia Zadora to yeah. to whoever, people with money, that's where they lived. That was the heartblood of Malibu at the time. And they were not very happy that we were next door.
I can't even imagine. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that was Beverly Hills and then Santa Monica. Now, Santa Monica is an interesting city for a lot of reasons here in Los Angeles. With Santa Monica, which is where we filmed the Beverly Hills Beach Club.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
And we would use the pier on occasion. If you remember the last episode in this first season when we went on the carousel.
Yes.
Where Gabrielle's on the carousel and yes. you can have me that moment. Well, that's a famous carousel on the Santa Monica Pier. And boy, was my producer, Paul Wagner, unhappy about that. Because at that point when we were filming there, that was probably the epicenter of the gang problem of all of Los Angeles or West Los Angeles, even yeah. more than Venice at that point. And they would come up there. And so, you know, hi, we're the film crew. We have to come through. Yeah, yeah. But, you know, we had security and we did that. But Santa Monica itself, you know, the thing about Los Angeles is it was always about real. The politics was always about real estate and who could live there.
Yeah.
So Santa Monica and Bel Air, very rich neighborhood right next to Beverly Hills, were back in the day restricted.
Mm-hmm.
There were restricted covenants, no people of color, no Jews. Yeah. No, mm-hmm. And so that, although we're talking many, many years later, there's still, at least in Santa Monica, at least in those years, was still a little arm's length to people who were not taxpayers in the city of Santa Monica.
Yeah.
So when we get the mandate to say, hey, we're going to be doing summer episodes, and those of you who listen, go back to one of our early ones with Sandy Grushow, when he said, we're going to do the Beverly Hills Beach Club, let's do that, let's, you know, about the, like, the Flamingo Kid.
Yeah, I love
him. And you know, and that was what he said. Now, one of the reasons that I jumped on it is because I knew that there was a beach club that had been closed down. Mm-hmm. Santa Monica had four beach clubs: the Bel Air Beach Club, the Ocean Beach Club, the Jonathan Club, and something called the Sand and Sea Club. Sand and Sea Club, oddly enough, was located right next door to a Tees Beach. And Tees Beach, every high school had a beach in the 60s. They went to their, you know, everyone had their own. And basically, it was each beach had their own concession stand. And Tees Beach, the name of the concession stand was Tees. And so, hence called Tees Beach. And of course, the Beverly Hills Beach would be right next to a private club where a lot of the kids at the day of the beach, well, we can shower there and let's get better food over there. And they had that. My parents, we weren't members, but there were some. And it had a swimming pool, and it was a little rundown. It was actually the once home of Marion Davies, who was William Randolph Hearst's wife.
Okay.
And girlfriend. First, you know, girlfriend and then what. And it was so they get closed down because there's a guy who wants to build a hotel there. Mm. And they do something. They say your pipes aren't any good. The water system, it's going to cost all this money. And so they have to shut it down. And but what it, because it's municipal, because it's on account of the beach. The voters of Santa Monica have to vote for it.
Yeah.
And they were not about to give a boutique hotel the go-ahead and voted it down. And it was sitting there 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later, Sandy Grushow says, do it at a beach club, and I know there's one available.
Wow. Interesting.
So we had our first scout there, and there was a – And it was a new regime. This is the second season. Mm-hmm. So there were some new people. And we had a new unit production manager named Jim Weatherall, who was whose wife also had worked on the show. Jim was a little older, very good friends of Duke Vincent. And he was a crew cut, and he was looked like a Marine. And you know, to him, doing production was going to war. You know, like, let's get it moving. Let's do it. And he was great. We got along great in the 2 years we got to work together. This woman from Santa Monica is telling him all the restrictions that we have. Can't do this, can't do this, can't do this, can't do this in terms of revamping it. And we're on a tight schedule. Remember, the summer episodes came out of nowhere.
Sure.
And we had to be ready to shoot. This was going to be shot on the first one if we're going to, you know, establish it. And we had to buy all the different kinds of furniture and different props for it.
You had to make it look like the beach club. You had to make it.
Exactly. Exactly.
It was not alive. Yeah.
And we've told the story here when we were editing Spring Dance that both Darren Star and I ended up in Hawaii at the same time because we knew we weren't going to get any vacation and had to be there. And we stayed at a luxury hotel, the Four Seasons, a luxury hotel. They had the best beach chairs I'd ever sat in. Those are the beach chairs at the Beverly Hills Beach Club.
Oh, wow.
We bought them from Florida, and they got shipped.
Amazing, there. Yeah.
But this lady, she was so terrible. She just was so negative. So you can't do this, you can't do this. But I leaned in to my unit production manager and whispered, Jim, please make sure I never have to hear her voice. And then I went on my merry way to whatever administrative stuff I had to do that day.
Yeah.
But that was a tough location. And wouldn't you know it, in the first year that we have it, that first summer, season two, was probably the coldest summer I can remember in L.A.
Oh, that, and it does look like that. There's some scenes where, like, when Brandon's trying to become the lifeguard, right? He looks like he's...
Oh, freezing. My God, that was a freezing morning. And, you know, because we get something here in Los Angeles called June Gloom.
Yeah.
And our show was debuting in early July. We're filming in May, you know? Yeah. So it's June Gloom personified. But it didn't even warm up that whole... the rest of the summer. It just was cold times. So...
in terms of the Walsh house, Dylan's house, for those that don't know that or have never been to Altadena, Dylan's house is right down the block from the right. Walsh house. Was that convenience or was somebody like, oh, my God, I love that house? How did that one?
Oh, no, total convenience. In fact, convenience matters a lot. You know, here are some locations that were very close to our facility in Van Nuys. The Sanders house.
Yeah.
We filmed as a practical house. We went in there. In other words, we never, yes, we did. We once built his bedroom in Chucky's back. That was a set.
Yeah.
But in the living rooms and things, we went to a house. That was in Encino. That was just down the block. Same thing with the Taylor house.
Yeah.
Jackie Taylor's house. Those were right nearby. And anytime, and I'm pretty sure, without telling you exactly where it is, that so was the Martin household, because it was always a question of convenience. You got to make your days. You don't make your days, you got to figure out how to reshoot it or let it go. And I think that with us, we maybe had 3 to 4 episodes that we didn't make our days. And I'll reveal at least 3 of the 3 I know on hand. We didn't make our days on the real McCoy. We didn't make our day on Vegas, the Vegas show. And we definitely didn't make our day on the dreams of Dylan McKay. And when we talk about that one down the road, I'll talk about the 8 hours I spent on the day before and the same day as the Rolling Stone concert to try to make heads or tails of what had a lot of material that wasn't shot.
Yeah.
But those are the only 3. So we worked really hard to make our days and stuff. And one of them is that you're not burdened by having to move your trucks. You're not burdened by having to go to a far location. For instance, when we did the Ashes to Ashes, the house we used crossed the street. And we'd go to that house every once in a while. I know that I saw it recently when we did one of the Diva episodes, and they meet at a pool and talk. That was across the street from the Walsh house, only because we needed it. We needed to make that. We needed to have an extra page to shoot.
Yeah, and then the Peach Pit does develop and change, but the Peach Pit that I think we all know at the end is the one that's in Pasadena, I think, right? The exterior of it, anyway.
Yes, that was all Paul, you know, and that was really a gift. I mean, you know, with Paul Wagner coming to me and saying, we're going to make this better. We're going to open this up. Because one of the things, and I think I mentioned it at one point, because we had so little money, and it does affect everything in those first 2 seasons, that we would build sets that were very difficult to shoot in. Mm-hmm. If you think of a set, if anybody thinks of a 4-wall set, you can pull one out and put the camera there and you get a different angles in there. Well, I went along with the fact when the art director, the first art director we had, a wonderful, very talented woman named Michelle Minch, who came from propaganda world, you know, that if you couldn't, like, for instance, in the Walsh kitchen, if you couldn't pull the walls out, then you had a shot going one way, you had a shot going the other way, and you had a shot going the other way. Well, so we didn't have enough money, but I could rationalize it that I have just limited the director's choices. And by limiting the director's choices, he or she will have to move faster.
Yeah.
They won't have as many time to deliberate. Should I do this shot? Should I do this shot?
Right.
And so there were all these things because it was very, very important to make our day. And probably one of the happiest days of my entire tenure there at 90210 was the first day of shooting, where we were behind. And because the director shot it in a certain way he did, we made the day. And That's they right. couldn't the spelling company couldn't come back to me, Duke Vincent, come back or say to Aaron, see, you get a guy here who doesn't know what he's doing, and this is what's good. But we made it, and we did a good job in making our days.
When you guys were write scripts, was there ever times when you were like, well, we can't go to the beach club and then shoot an exterior at the, you know, at the Walsh House because it's just so far? Like, were you, do you ever think about things like that, or did you just write to write and that's, and then we'll figure out the schedule at another time?
Pretty much the latter. I mean, you know that if you're shooting at the beach club and the Walsh House, those aren't going to be at the same day.
Yeah.
But what you have to be prepared for is to change your location. To do the scene that you were going to have in the bedroom, it, instead it's a walk and talk in the backyard.
Yes.
Or you do something to make it work. And yeah. And you usually do have to change a couple of scenes. And of course, a couple of weeks ago when we talked about double ups, now you got two ones that things have to get changed. More locations were changed during double ups than any other time.
I believe that. Yeah.
You know,
that must have been tough. And then you know, everybody goes to college, and we kind of talked about that a little bit, but you're looking for a college. Is Occidental College convenience as well? Or you had talked about Aaron having a whole other place where he wanted.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Occidental College is in the very northeast part of Los Angeles County, in a town called Eagle Rock. And just down the road from Eagle Rock is Altadena.
Yeah.
They're not that far apart.
No.
But I, oddly enough, once we started shooting at the university, we don't have that many exteriors at the Walsh House anymore. In fact, when people came to the Walsh House, what you got a lot was at the doorbell, at the doorway.
Yeah.
You didn't need the walk up, the ramp up. Only when Dylan drove into the driveway or Brandon did you really need that.
Yeah, unless it was specific to that.
Yeah, otherwise it was pretty much that, and we would shoot that right on the stage because we built the outside to be able to do that. And that,
yeah.
I don't think we had that at the first episode necessarily first, but it was one of the early sets that had to be built.
Yeah, for sure.
The way around that one.
And you had to recreate it almost to look like the Altadena House, which is.
Oh, absolutely. It was completely resembling it. But getting back to your question about California University. So those who know the story of 90210 know that there was Mr. Spelling was resistant to getting the kids out of high school. It hadn't been done before. He was worried about it. And he finally got placated and was willing to do it, but was never really very happy about it. And one of the things that he wanted to do was put the university at a school in up the coast on the Pacific Coast Highway called Pepperdine. Pepperdine's gorgeous university, if you like that kind of thing. It's got a huge lawn that comes down to the Pacific Coast Highway. It's got some buildings. The beach is near.
That's
and
beautiful. Yeah.
Oh, it's a fine place, but California University was not going to be Malibu U. It had to look like a state university college. And Occidental had a beautiful college, beautiful campus, big enough. I remember we took the tour of it. The only place that they kind of said, be careful, you have to get permission in advance to film and don't do it too often, was their chapel. So if you remember the episode, which we just talked about recently, and another bonus, Pete special with Joshua Beckett.
Yeah.
His memorial service was in that chapel on the campus.
Oh, interesting. Wow.
But everything else was, you know, it was the wide thing. We used the auditorium, this. And we shot in the summers, you know, we shot in the fall. We made the deal when we made the deal. And we go back to shoot on campus. And the students are furious. They had no input into this. And they don't like our show at all. They don't like our show because, hey, you know why they don't like our show? Because we are, you know, the Caucasian Express, as far as they're concerned.
Right.
It doesn't, our cast is not going to reflect their the demographics of the college as they saw it. And right. certainly politically, it was becoming a little more of a political school, I guess. Mm. And we didn't fit into that primer. And so we had actually offered them to have students get intimately involved with our production. Who's interested in wardrobe? Who's interested in fabric? Who's interested in that? We have that. Who's interested in art? Who's interested in that? We have a department. You can come into that. Who's interested in all the different things? Who wants to be in the writer's room? Who's interested in the science of the sound waves and all the different things yeah. that do? And we would open it up to them. And that was greeted with a thud. They didn't see that as any value, but I saw it as a value.
Definitely.
We make some friends on the campus. And the other, so what we decided to do was, and what I believe the chancellor at the time, who was replaced, I think he started in the fourth season, and I think he left at the fifth or sixth. I mean, I don't think he didn't go all 4 years, but he was there the 2 years that I, seasons 4 and 5. And the one thing that we knew we kind of had to do was to present ourselves as something that the students would like. And so from season 4, we showed them the third episode, which was the first one that was going to be showing California, their campus. Mm-hmm. And who I got to come with me to face the students was my buddy, Ian Ziering.
Nice.
Who was just, you know, we were very close when we were making the show. He's a terrific guy, still in touch. And someday I think he will come on our show.
Just I think not so. Right I hope now. So. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, so we go show up, and I remember the scene where they do the establishing shots and the titles of the campus, the auditorium, which was pretty filled, almost looked like the election of Joshua Brandon, which was filmed in there. A lot of people in there. They start clapping. They're erupting. They're very happy. That's the only moment they were happy the whole time. And Ian and I, we took a lot of questions.
Yeah.
A lot of insults. A lot of, you know, and so it never really was a great relationship. It was, you know, we were able to shoot in the rant in the area right there. So the Cake House and the Alpha House were right there. They were open to us, but the those locations. Mm. But and unfortunately, the one question I can't answer, were they really fraternities and sororities? That I don't remember, and I don't think it was brought to my attention. Maybe they were, maybe they weren't. But they were like a block away from the college itself.
Yeah.
And the, but we, so everything went fine the fourth year. We were able to do whatever we needed to do. The fifth year season, we did this episode, Hate is a Four-Letter Word, in which we deal with the notion of some of the tensions that exist between the Jewish community and the African-American community, having Gabriel Carteris be that and this and that, having a speaker who, you know, might be anti-Semitic, might not be.
I love that.
Nonetheless, really one of my favorites, too. I'm proud of that one from the fifth season. I know it was used in many classrooms, so that made me feel good about it. But we did have a moment where we had to put up swastikas.
Oh, boy.
And the students, we were not happy.
No.
They were not happy with our set dressing. And I think we lost some time filming that day to do a powwow. I don't remember if it was exactly a sit-in, but I do remember there was... I was kept abreast of the situation.
What about things like the radio station that David was hosting a show on? Is that shot at school, or is that just a set that you guys created? Or it was mostly the
school? I believe that was the school. I believe we got up to do that. The gym, of course.
Right.
So you were
utilizing the space quite a bit.
Oh, absolutely. We had to, because again, need to make your day.
Right.
And so we would be doing that.
And then you're picking a location for the girls and David to live in, like the beach house, right? How did you pick that location? And what was that like working with them?
So the compromise from not shooting at Pepperdine University was that the girls would live in a beach house. They wouldn't be dorm bound. They would have swinging apartment. We had Andrea in the dorm in the beginning. Steve was in the cake house.
Yep.
And of course, David Silver goes with the girls.
Right.
So we had Brandon's living at home and Dylan's living at home. And in Valerie wasn't even there yet in the
process. Right.
Brenda's living at home. Well, come back from Minnesota and she's living at home. So it was the only one we really had to think about. They wanted to film at the beach. Why they chose the South Bay is beyond, as I said to you, Malibu doesn't like you very much. Santa Monica's tough. Start going down the way, but you had Marina Del Rey.
Yeah.
You have Venice where I live.
Yeah.
You have, there were other communities. They hopped the channel, and we started going south. The one thing about Hermosa Beach is right next, which is where that apartment was, is right next door to Manhattan Beach. Mm-hmm. These were communities that I played against as a athlete from Beverly Hills High School. And with Manhattan Beach and Hermosa Beach, Redondo Beach, and the Palos Verdes Peninsula, which really comprises the basis of the beach communities of the South Bay. Torrance has a little sliver, and then Hawthorne is in Torrance, so the inland places there. Hawthorne is where the Beach Boys grew up. But that's the South Bay. There's no show business in the South Bay. Then. None. It started to happen because David Kelly built a studio down there or revamped a studio warehouses. And there is a studio now in Manhattan Beach, which is very convenient to the airport. It's a great place for a studio. It's just not where the studio moguls put their roots.
Right.
And it didn't have much show business in it at all. And nonetheless, we go down to Hermosa Beach in a formal way. We had a very good location scout. We had a different location manager for the first two seasons, and he was good too. But this person was really thorough and very professional. And we went to the city council, and I think we won 4-1. Mm-hmm. We go down and we shoot on the episode where they find it, right? Mm-hmm. And if you remember, there's the episode, just certain things like that that we're focused on. And one of the neighbors, remember I told you got to get all the neighbors to sign, goes back to the city council and gets them to rescind it in 2 weeks, 10 days. So we've committed to it.
We're
writing for it.
Yep.
Built a set on the in Van Nuys to have the inside of it.
Yeah.
And really probably our most problematic set we built. And the reason that is that we're running out of space.
Right.
And we still only had three warehouses, not the fourth warehouse, which is where the Peach Pit After Dark was located. And that warehouse you often see, that's the brick building where people used to park, even before the After Dark would park and then,
it's the Peach Pit parking lot, right? The Peach Pit's parking lot as well.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it was. Mm-hmm. But anyway, when we built the beach house, it was no space, and you could not film somebody standing at their front door and have the cameras and go both ways. You couldn't do it. You could shoot. If you were coming in the door, I could shoot you.
Yeah.
But I could never shoot the reverse of me answering the door. What was really disappointing to Paul Wagner and Gail Patterson and myself, we were approached by the California State Film Commission to say, we want to take them to court. We want to do this. We need to not have so many restrictions placed. It's very important. Let's do this. And the Spelling Company was all gung-ho, but they probably maybe would have had to pay for a lawyer themselves or something. And so it went away and we never proved the point. So it was, again, kind of a, you know, we're tough guys. No, we're really not. We're lambs, you know, and it was disappointing because we should have made a point. It was very unfair what the city of Hermosa Beach did to a business that was paying for it. And by the way, we were limited for how much, I think we could only film there 12 times outside the house, maybe 12, 14 times. It was every other show.
Yeah.
Something we were not allowed to be there every day.
So what you mainly did was you used the interior set when they were at the beach house for the most part. Yeah. The interior set that you created.
Completely. Yeah. And we always intended to, but we just didn't have as much beach stuff. So even if you think about it's in the fourth season, there's the moment where, you know, Dylan tries to teach, you know, Erica how to surf. And there's the scene where Dylan and Peter walk down the beach to talk about pollution and different things. And that's all filmed in Santa Monica. We basically gave up on the beach. I remember we went back there when, at the start of season 5, I think the episode ends with, a down and out Dylan McKay on the beach looking at his point of view shot of of the beach house.
When Ray put all the pumpkins on the beach house, that's the set.
Set. We couldn't go near the building. We weren't allowed to.
It's crazy, right?
It was a very, very difficult one. You know, one of the things that I failed to say right on the top is that, I'm a native of Los Angeles.
Right.
I went to Beverly Hills High School. So it was very important for me to film my town in the places that I could I could.
Cool. Yeah.
So some of the fun places that we got to go was Santa Anita Racetrack.
Yes.
Season 2. We went to the old, where L.A. was founded, called Overo Street. And that's where when Dylan McKay was in the episode to find out what happened to Jack and goes down there. And it feels very
like a
mystery. That's filmed in Overo Street.
Yeah.
When he finds out that the FBI, the real story, it's there, get him intrigued. We filmed, of course, at the Rose Bowl.
Yeah.
We filmed at the Planetarium, which is our, which was interesting because that's where Rebel Without a Cause was filmed.
Mm-hmm.
And we had us dialogue passages with Dylan and Brenda, in which Dylan explains that this is where it was filmed and it was, it's famous.
Mm-hmm.
And he makes the reference to the famous, now I have a senior moment. James Dean, James Dean on the scene. And Luke at that point in his life was really antagonistic about critics who would say, he looks like James Dean. Because in those years,
that came up a lot.
Kind of did. And we had to change that dialogue. I acquiesced to Mr. Perry on that one. Because he had made it pretty clear that, he was not ever happy about those
comparisons.
But I just was having him do a factual thing. But anyway, we filmed up there and loved that. It also was really important to me to, when LA, we made the show when LA was having all its warts, if you think about it, with the Rodney King situation, we had fires, we had OJ. So I wanted to always try to go to places to say, this is what it looks like. So you did see Brandon driving the Mustang down right past burned out buildings in the center city.
Right.
In season 3. In season 5, when Dylan goes to get his first regression therapy, remember that that's you drive up Malibu and every other house has been burned. And the first conversation that he has with the therapist is, how come your house didn't burn down?
Yeah.
That was a really wildfire. Malibu was very lucky not to really burn on that one.
Yeah.
I mean, come to the beach and cross the highway and that it was never seen, lived here all my life, never saw a fire like that one in the regions that are more the city and not an outlying area. So, you know, that mattered to me a great deal. And then what was really fun about locations, Pete, was when we would go out of town. We didn't get to do it too much. And I'm the biggest one, of course, I'm going to leave for my buddy Larry Mullen, because the biggest location we ever did, of course, was Cabo San Lucas and the Palmia. And that was the show where Dylan gets his money back. And that's when Larry will be leading us together.
Yeah, for sure.
But the two that we did to go out of town, of course, at the end was Palm Springs weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And up in San Francisco, when we for when Brandon drives north to see Emily.
Yeah.
In season four, we did that. They ride the cable car. We get a beautiful view of them up in the hill looking down. You can see the whole bay.
And this week, this week we're going to talk about Paris. You guys did not go to Paris.
And Paris. Yes. No, we wanted to. We made the case to go to Paris. And 2020 hindsight, we were better off not going. Like they were right.
Yeah.
Because to go to Paris, to afford to do Paris, we would have just a shot, match it, that's it.
Yeah.
We got a lot of play. So we recreated Paris in the back lot of Universal. We recreated a part of Paris, if you guys know the Tuileries. The park is the Huntington Library out in San Marino.
Mm.
And it was a really beautiful time of year to be there. And and you know, you do with what you got to do. But you know, the thing about a location is to remember is that they have to service your show.
Right.
You know, we didn't get an episode in Dodger Stadium because there was never a reason to be there.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I know that Larry particularly carried on that tradition in seasons 6 and 7. You had the Queen Mary.
Yeah.
The Tournament House.
Yeah.
Other places that you know, try to show this is the city. But, you know, after a while, and I think after, you know, way after, even after Larry and Jessica left, they did, you know, go to Hawaii for a little bit, you know, and they did some pretty basic places.
Yeah.
But, you know, the aggressiveness of the show and the production changed as time went on.
Sure.
You want to spend the money. Locations cost more money. They just
totally right. It's easier to just do it on your set
on
your
studio. Yeah.
Yeah. There's also some beautiful like romantic spots, and I think that comes across in LA where Brandon and Emily go, right? That lookout makeout point that also Dylan takes her to.
And you know, I just noticed in one of the episodes that we were watching that it wasn't the makeout stuff, and we're going to be talking about that in September.
Yeah.
But that location, we would use it because it was a good place to have an open view, and it was accessible.
Yes.
It was not the exact same location, by the way, if you remember, but it was the same street, Mulholland Drive, where Dylan drives his car off the road and goes down the mountain.
Yep.
That was Laurel Canyon, and that also was Dan Attia's.
Mm.
And of course, Dan will, you know, he's coming on
this week,
Thursday, coming up from this one, and we're real excited because he directed some of the best ones, and he did 20 of them for us, including Commencement. We're not talking about Commencement because it's its own thing.
We'll get there.
But with that, we went up to the sign, the Hollywood sign, when it was in pretty much disrepair. For years and years and years. They had just fixed it, and then we went up and did our thing up on the mountain. And that one, of course, was written specifically to, we're going up there, you know.
Yeah.
And without the location, we couldn't have done the bit.
Definitely. I mean, and they were, and you didn't have it, that was okay, that location was okay, the Hollywood sign?
Yes, because it really wasn't as traveled as much. It wasn't.
Now it's
the iconography. It was there from the start, but it really picked up once they fixed the sign. Yeah. And after Beverly Hills did its best numbers in the commencement episode and ended the third season, maybe there was more interest because of that.
Probably. You know. Well, you forget that it definitely, you know, definitely affected pop culture and things of that nature. I know people still go around and check out all the houses and whatnot, which they're welcome to do, I guess.
Well, right? Of course, we filmed at the universities that weren't Occidental. We filmed that SC, the homecoming episode where they steal the mascot. And we filmed at UCLA even. There was an episode early on. In fact, it was Paul Wagner's first episode, Jeffrey White's last episode. And it was called The 17-Year Itch and had a twin study. And that was right at UCLA's campus as well. So we had to go out and use the city. And, you know, so many shows in Los Angeles, you know, because they're cop shows, they show, you know, other parts of town or, you know, drive into luxury, you know, houses and things. We wanted to show what the city looked like. And I do remember, I'll leave this, we're talking about this and that, about shooting second unit, about shooting the establishing shots and the running shot and the stuff. And right in the first, before we went into production, I supervised the first shot because I was a documentary filmmaker like you, Pete.
Yeah.
So I love that. And I wanted to make it look real and new places. So we filmed on the top of the, got establishing shots on the top of the roof of the Bel Air Hotel.
Yeah.
If you notice, sometimes in the Beverly Hills montages, you'll see people walking in a park coming in a walkway. I'm in that shot that you can find me. Not as clear as when I'm in the limo.
Right, I love that scene. Yeah,
I'm in two other shots, episodes as well. But that one, you know, in that particularly shot, and we drove when we went down Melrose and shot some places. We had the things we shot, and I remember we ended up back doing something at the Bellage Hotel. We were dropping things off there, and it was the day that they were doing the premiere of Evening Shade, which was a television CBS TV show with Burt Reynolds, and it was MTM, and everybody's in very dressed up, and it's very Hollywood, and they're with this ragged crew, and I'm the executive producer, and I'm as ragged as any of them, and thinking, boy, that show business, we're something else.
Right.
I don't quite know what we are, but, you know, and...
Lastly, man, I know you got to do a tour of some of this, Brian Greene, you know, they did a tour.
Larry and I, we went to the locations with super fans who came out for the 90210 festival that Brian Greene and our buddy Darren Martin put on.
Yeah. What was that like for you? Was it fun to revisit those locations without all the stress of shooting something? Did it bring back some memories?
It was fun. Only in the sense that it was fun to meet a real cross section of major fans.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just got an email yesterday from Louise from London, who was a friend, and we had, you know, correspondent people from Vancouver and Atlanta and Japan and all over the map came to be with us in that air conditioned van. And that was the highlight, I think.
Yeah. Well, this is great, man. I think this is a fun one, you know, for a bonus episode for fans. I don't know if there's more locations that we can cover. I think we kind of rock.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. Yeah. So as a birthday gift
Happy birthday
to the fans, this is our locations episode. Chuck, man, thanks for doing this. This was a lot of fun.
Fun to be with you. See you on next time, Wednesday.
It sounds good. All right, man.
All right, brother.